Chapter 15. Aboard the steamer Fever Dream, New Orleans, August 1857. In the heavy silence that followed Joshua's story, Abner Marsh could hear his own steady breathing and the thump of his heart labouring in his chest. Joshua had been talking for hours, it seemed, but in the black stillness of the cabin there was no way to be sure. Outside it might be getting light. Toby would be cooking breakfast, the cabin passengers would be taking their morning strolls along the promenade on the boiler deck, the levee would be bustling with activity. But inside Joshua York's cabin, night went on and on, forever. The words of that damned poem came back to him, and Abner Marsh heard himself say,
"Morn came and went, and came, and brought no day."
"Darkness," said Joshua softly.
"And you've lived in it your whole damn life," Marsh said. "No morning, not ever. God, Joshua, how do you stand it?"
York made no reply.
"It ain't sensible," Marsh said. "It's the goddamnedest story I ever sat still for. But damned if I don't believe you."
"I'd hoped you would," said York. "And now, Abner." That was the hard part, Abner Marsh thought.
"I don't know," he said honestly. "All them people you say you killed, and still I kind of feel sorry for you. Don't know if I ought to. Maybe I ought to try and kill you. Maybe that's the only damn Christian thing to do. Maybe I ought to try to help you."
He snorted, annoyed at the dilemma.
"I guess what I ought to do is hear you out a little more and wait before I make up my mind. 'Cause you left something out, Joshua. That you did."
"Yes?" York prompted.
"New Madrid," said Abner Marsh firmly.
"The blood on my hands," Joshua said. "What can I tell you, Abner? I took a life in New Madrid, but it was not as you might suspect."
"Tell me how it was, then. Go on."
"Simon told me many things of the history of our people, our secrets, our customs, our ways. One thing he said I found greatly disturbing, Abner. This world that your people have built is a daylight world, not easy for us to live in. Sometimes to make it easier, one of us will turn to one of you. We can use the power that dwells within our eyes and our voice. We can use our strength, our vitality, the promise of life unending. We can use the very legends your people have erected around us for our own purposes. With lies and fear and promises, we can fashion for ourselves a human thrall. Such a creature can be very useful. He can protect us by day, go where we cannot go, move among men without suspicion. In New Madrid there had been a killing, at the very woodyard where we stopped. From what I read in the newspapers, I had great hopes of finding one of my own race. Instead I found, call him what you will, a slave, a pet, an associate, a thrall. He was an old, old man, a mulatto, bald and wrinkled and hideous, with a milk-glass eye and a face terribly scarred by some ancient fire. He was not pleasing to look at, and inside he was foul, corrupt. When I came upon him, he leapt up brandishing an axe, and then he looked at my eyes. He recognized me, Abner. He knew what I was at once. And he fell to his knees, crying and blubbering, worshipping me, grovelling as a dog to a man, begging me to fulfil the promise. The promise, he kept saying, the promise, the promise. Finally I bid him stop, and he did, at once, cringing away in fear. He had been taught to heed a bloodmaster's words, you see. I asked him to tell me the story of his life, hoping he might lead me to my own people. His story was as grim as my own. He was born a free man of color in a place called the Swamp, which I gather is a notorious district of New Orleans. He lived as a pimp, a cutpurse, finally a cutthroat, preying on the flatboat men who came down to the city. He'd killed 2 men before he was 10. Later he served under Vincent Gambi, the bloodiest of the pirates of Barataria. He was overseer to the slaves Gambi stole from Spanish slavers and resold in New Orleans. He was a voodoo man as well, and he had served us. He told me of his bloodmaster, the man who took him in thrall, who laughed at his voodoo and promised to teach him greater, darker magic. "Serve me," the bloodmaster had promised, "and I will make you one of us. Your scars will heal, your eye will see again, you will drink blood and live forever, never aging." So the mulatto had served. For almost 30 years he did everything he was bid. He lived for the promise. He killed for the promise, was taught to eat warm flesh, to drink blood. Until finally his master saw a better opportunity. The mulatto, old and sickly now, became a hindrance. His usefulness passed, so he was discarded. It might have been merciful to kill him, but instead he was sent away, upriver, to fend for himself. A thrall does not go against his blood master, even if he knows the promise made him to be a lie. So the old mulatto had wandered on foot, living by robbery and murder, moving up the river slowly. Sometimes he earned honest money as a slave catcher or labourer, but mostly he kept to himself in the woods, a recluse who lived by night. When he dared, he ate the flesh and drank the blood of his victims, still believing it would help restore his youth and health. He had been living around New Madrid for a year, he told me. He used to chop some wood for the woodyard man, who was too old and feeble to do it himself. He knew how seldom anyone visited that woodyard, so... well, you know the rest. Abner, your people can learn much from mine, but not the things that he had learned, not that. I felt pity for him. He was old and hideous and without hope. Yet I was angry as well, as angry as I had been in Budapest with the rich woman who liked to wash in blood. In the legends of your race, my people have been made the very essence of evil. The vampire has no soul, no nobility, no hope of redemption, it is said. I will not accept that, Abner. I have killed countless times, have done many terrible things, but I am not evil. I did not choose to be the way I was. Without choice, there can be no good nor evil. My people have never had that choice. The Red Thirst has ruled us, condemned us, robbed us of all we might have been. But your people, Abner, they have no such compulsion. That thing I encountered in the forest beyond New Madrid, he had never felt the Red Thirst. He could have been anything, done anything. Instead, he had chosen to become what he was. Oh, to be sure, one of my own race shares the guilt. The man who lied to him promised him things that could never be. Yet I can understand the reason for that, much as I might loathe it. An ally among your people can make all the difference. All of us know fear, Abner, my race and yours alike. What I cannot understand is why one of you would lust so after a life in darkness, would desire the Red Thirst. Yet he did desire it, with a great passion. He begged me not to leave him as the other blood master had done. I could not give him what he wanted. I would not, even if it had been possible. I gave him what I could.
You tore his damn throat out for him, didn't you?
Abner Marsh said to the darkness. I told you, Valerie said. Marsh had almost forgotten she was there, quiet as she'd been. He doesn't understand. Listen to him. I killed him, Joshua admitted. With my bare hands, yes. His blood ran off my fingers, soaked into the earth. But it did not touch my lips, Abner, and I buried him intact. Another great silence filled the cabin while Abner Marsh pulled at his beard and thought.
Choice, you said, he volunteered finally. That's the difference between good and evil, you said. Now it looks like I'm the one got to make a choice. We all make our choices, Abner, every day. Maybe that's so, said Marsh. I don't much care for this one, though. You say you want my help, Joshua. Let's say I give it. How's that going to make me any different from that damned old mulatto you killed? Answer me that.
I would never make you into something like that, Joshua said. I have never tried. Abner, I will live for centuries after you are dead and gone. Have I ever tried to tempt you with that?
You tempted me with a goddamn steamboat instead, Marsh replied, and you sure as hell told me a pack of lies.
Even my lies have held a kind of truth, Abner. I told you I sought out vampires to put an end to their evil. Can't you see the truth in that? I need your help, Abner, but as a partner, not as a bloodmaster needs a human thrall. Abner Marsh considered that.
All right, he said. Maybe I believe you, maybe I should trust you. But if you want me for a partner, you're going to have to trust me too.
I've taken you into my confidence. Isn't that enough?
Hell no, said Abner Marsh. Yeah, you told me the truth, and now you're waiting for an answer. Only if I give the wrong answer, I don't get to leave this cabin alive, do I? Your lady friend there will see to that even if you don't.
Very perceptive, Captain Marsh, Valerie said from the darkness. I bear you no malice. but Joshua must not be harmed.
Marsh snorted. See what I mean? That ain't trust. We ain't partners on this steamer no more. Things are too goddamned uneven. You can kill me any damn time you want. I gotta behave myself or else I'm dead. The way I see it, that makes me a slave, not no partner. I'm alone, too. You got all your damn blood-drinking friends aboard to help you out if there's trouble. God knows what you're planning, you sure don't tell me. But I can't talk to nobody, you say. Hell, Joshua, maybe you ought to kill me right now. I don't think I like this here kind of partnership.
Joshua York considered that in silence for a time. Then he said, Very well, I see your point. What would you have me do to demonstrate my trust?
For a start, said Marsh. Supposing I wanted to kill you, how would I go about it?
No! Valerie cried in alarm. Marsh heard her footsteps as she moved toward Joshua. You can't tell him that. You don't know what he's planning, Joshua. Why would he ask that if he didn't intend to make us even? Joshua said softly. I understand him, Valerie, and it is a risk we must take. She started to plead again, but Joshua hushed her and said to Marsh, Fire will do it. Drowning. With a gun, aim for the head. Our brains are vulnerable. A shot through the skull would kill me, while a shot to the heart would only knock me down until I healed. The legends are accurate in one respect. If you cut off our heads and hammer a stake through our hearts, we die. He gave a raspy chuckle. One of your kind would do the same, I think. The sun can be deadly as well, as you have seen. The rest, the silver and garlic, that is all nonsense. Abner Marsh let out his breath noisily, scarcely aware he'd been holding it.
Boil me for an egg, he said.
Satisfied? York asked.
Almost, Marsh said. One more thing.
A match scratched against leather, and suddenly a little dancing flame burned in York's cupped palm. He touched it to an oil lamp so the flame crept across to the wick, and a dusky yellow illumination filled the cabin. There, Joshua said, extinguishing the match with a wave of his hand. Better, Abner, more even. Partnership demands a little light, don't you think, so we can look each other in the eye. Abner Marsh found he was blinking back tears. After so long in darkness, even a little light seemed terribly bright. But the room looked larger now. The terror and the suffocating closeness of it melted away. Joshua York was regarding Marsh calmly. His face was covered with husks of dry, dead skin. When he smiled, one crackled and flaked away. His lips were still puffy, and he looked as though he had two black eyes, but the burns and blisters were all but gone. The change was astonishing.
What is this other thing, then, Abner?
Marsh took York at his word and looked him straight in the eye.
I ain't going to go this alone, he said. I'm going to tell...
No! Valerie said from where she stood by Joshua's side. One is bad enough. We can't let him spread this. They'll kill us.
Hell, woman, I wasn't figuring on putting no advertisement in the True Delta, you know.
Joshua steepled his fingers and regarded Marsh thoughtfully.
Just what were you figuring then, Abner? One or two people, Marsh said. I ain't the only one who's been suspicious, you know. And it could be you'll need more help than I can give you. I'll only talk to them I know I can trust. Harry Mike, for one, and Mr. Jeffers. He's damn smart, and he's already been wondering over you. The rest don't need to know. Mr. Albright's a mite too prim and godly to hear all this, and if you told Mr. Fram, it'd be all over the river inside of a week. The whole damn Texas could burn off without Whitey Blake noticing, so long as his engines weren't bothered none. But Jeffers and Harry Mike, they ought to know. They're a good man, and you may need them.
Need them? Joshua said. How is that, Abner?
What if one of your folks don't fancy that drink of yours?
Joshua York's genial smile vanished abruptly. He stood up, walked across the cabin, and poured himself a drink. Whiskey, neat. When he turned back, he was still frowning. Perhaps, he said. I need to think on this. If they can truly be trusted, I have certain misgivings about the trip down the bayou. For once, Valerie did not utter the expected protest. Marsh glanced at her and saw that her lips were pressed tightly together, and in her eyes was something that might just have been the beginnings of fear.
What's wrong? Marsh said. Both of you look... queer.
Valerie's head snapped up. Him she said. I asked you to turn back upriver. I would ask it again if I thought either of you might listen. He is down there at Cypress Landing.
Who? Marsh asked, baffled.
A bloodmaster, Joshua said. Abner, understand that all my kind do not think as I do. Even among my own followers, well, Simon is loyal, Smith and Brown are passive, but Catherine, from the very beginning, I have felt the resentment in her. I think there is a darkness at the center of her, something that prefers the old ways, that grieves for the ship she missed and chafes under my domination. She obeys me because she must. I am bloodmaster, but she does not like it. And the others, those we have taken aboard on the river, I am not sure of them. Except for Valerie and Jean Ardon, I trust none of them fully. Remember your warnings to me about Raymond Ortega? I share your misgivings about him. Valerie means nothing to him, so you are wrong in thinking jealousy a motive, yet otherwise right. To bring Raymond aboard at Natchez, I had to conquer him as I conquered Simon so long ago in the Carpathians. With Cara de Gris and Vincent Thibault, there were other struggles. Now they follow me because they must. It is the way of my people. Yet I wonder if some of them, at least, are not waiting. Waiting to see what will happen when the fever dream steams down the bayou, and I come face to face with he who was master of them all. Valerie has told me much of him. He is old, Abner. Older than Simon or Catherine, older than any of us. His age itself disturbs me. Now he calls himself Damon Julian, but before that name he was Gilles Lamont, the same Gilles Lamont whom that wretched mulatto served for 30 futile years. I am told he has another human thrall now. Sour Billy Tipton, Valerie said with loathing. Valerie is afraid of this Julian, Joshua York said. The others also speak of him with fear, but sometimes with a certain loyalty as well. As bloodmaster, he took care of them. He gave them sanctuary, wealth, and feasts. They feasted on slaves. No wonder he chose to settle where he did. Valerie shook her head. Leave him, Joshua, please, for me, if for no other reason. Damon will not welcome your coming, will not cherish the freedom you bring. Joshua scowled in annoyance. He still has others of our people with him. Would you have me abandon them as well? No. And you may be wrong about Julian. He has been in the grip of the red thirst for uncounted centuries, and I can soothe that fever. Valerie crossed her arms, her violet eyes furious. And if he will not be soothed? You do not know him, Joshua. He is educated, intelligent, cultured, a lover of beauty, York said stubbornly. You said as much. He is strong as well. As with Simon and Raymond and Cara, they follow me now. Damon is different, Valerie insisted. It is not the same. Joshua York made an impatient gesture. It makes no difference. I will control him. Abner Marsh had watched them argue in thoughtful silence, but now he spoke up. Joshua's right, he said to Valerie.
Hell, I looked in his eyes once or twice myself, and he nearly busted every bone in my hand the first time we shook. Besides, what was it you called him? A king?
Yes, Valerie admitted. The Pale King.
Well, if he's this Pale King of yours, it stands to reason that he's got to win, don't it?
Valerie glanced from Marsh to York and back again. Then she trembled. You haven't seen him, either of you. She hesitated a moment, tossed her dark hair back with a pale, slender hand, and faced Abner Marsh squarely. Perhaps I was wrong about you, Captain Marsh. I do not have Joshua's strength nor his trust. I have been ruled by the Red Thirst for half a century. Your people were my prey. You cannot befriend your prey. You cannot. You cannot trust them either. That was why I urged Joshua to kill you. You cannot just cast aside the cautions of a lifetime. Do you understand? Abner Marsh nodded wearily. I am still uncertain, Valerie continued. But Joshua has been showing us many new things, and I am willing to admit that perhaps you can be trusted. Perhaps. She scowled fiercely. But whether or not I was wrong about you, I am right about Damon Julian. Abner Marsh frowned, not knowing what to say. Joshua reached out and took Valerie's hand in his own.
I think you are wrong to be so fearful, he said. But for your sake, I will move with all caution. Abner,
Do as you wish. Tell Mr. Jeffers and Mr. Dunn. It will be good to have their help if Valerie is right. Choose the men for a special watch and let the rest ashore. When the fever dream steams up the bayou, I want her manned only by our best and most reliable, the bare minimum needed to run her. No religious fanatics, no one who is easily frightened, no one prone to rashness.
Harry, Mike, and I'll do the picking, Marsh said.
I will meet Julian on my own steamer, in my own time, with you and the best of your men behind me. Be careful how you tell Jeffers and Dunn. It must be done correctly. He looked at Valerie.
Satisfied?
No, she said. Joshua smiled. I can do no more. He looked back at Abner Marsh.
Abner, I am glad you are not my enemy. I am close now, my dreams at hand. In beating the Red Thirst, I had my first great triumph.
I would like to think that here, tonight, you and I have fashioned the second, the beginning of friendship and trust between our races.
The fever dream will steam on the razor edge between night and day, banishing the spectre of old fear wherever she goes. We will achieve great things together, friend.
Marsh didn't care over much for flowery talk, but Joshua's passion reached him nonetheless, and he gave a grudging smile.
Got a lot of work to do before we achieve any goddamn thing at all, Marsh said, gathering up his walking stick and getting to his feet. I'll be going then.
Fine, Joshua said, smiling. I will take my rest and see you once again at twilight. Make certain the boat is ready to depart. We'll get this done with as quickly as we can.
I'll have our steam up, Marsh said as he took his leave.
Outside, day had come. It looked to be about 9, Abner Marsh thought, as he stood blinking outside the captain's cabin after Joshua had locked the door behind him. The morning was dismal, hot and muggy, with a heavy grey overcast that hid the sun. Soot and smoke from steamers on the river hung in the air. There's going to be a storm, Abner Marsh thought, and the prospect was one he found disheartening. He was suddenly aware of how little sleep he'd gotten and felt unutterably tired, but there was so much to do that he dared not even consider a nap. He descended to the main saloon, figuring that breakfast would give him some spirit. He drank a gallon of hot black coffee while Toby cooked him up some boiled beefcakes and waffles, with blueberries on the side. As he was eating, Jonathan Jeffers entered the saloon, saw him, and came striding over to the table.
"Sit down and eat something," Marsh said. "Want to have a long talk with you, Mr. Jeffers. Not here, though. Better wait till I'm through and then go to my cabin."
"Fine," Jeffers replied in a distracted sort of way. "Cap'n, where have you been? I've been looking for you for hours. You weren't in your cabin."
"Joshua and I were chatting," Marsh said.
"What?"
"There's a man here to see you," Jeffers said. "He came aboard in the middle of the night. He's very insistent." "Don't like to be kept around waiting like I'm some no-count trash," the stranger said.
Marsh hadn't even seen the man enter. Without so much as a bayou leave, the man pulled out a chair and sat down. He was an ugly, haggard-looking cuss, his long face cratered by the pox. Thin, limp brown hair hung down in strands across his forehead. His complexion was unhealthy, and patches of hair and skin were covered by scaly white flakes, like he'd been in his own private snowfall. Yet he wore an expensive black broadcloth suit and a ruffled white shirt front and cameo ring. Abner Marsh didn't care for his looks, his tone, the flat press of his lips, his ice-coloured eyes.
"Who the hell are you?" he said gruffly. "You better have a damn good reason for bothering me at breakfast, or I'll have you chucked over the damn side."
Just saying so made Marsh feel somewhat better. He'd always figured there was no use being a steamboat captain if you couldn't tell somebody to go to hell once in a while. The stranger's sour expression changed not a flicker, but he fixed his icy eyes on Marsh with a kind of smirking malice.
"I'm going to be taking passage on this fancy raft of yours." "The hell you are," Marsh said.
"Shall I call Hairy Mike to deal with this ruffian?" Jeffers offered coolly. The man looked at the clerk with brief contempt. His eyes moved back to Marsh.
"Cap'n Marsh, I come last night to bring you an invite for you and your partner. Figured one of you at least be out and about by night. Well, it's day now, so it'll have to be tonight instead. Dinner at the San Luis, along about an hour past sunset, you and Cap'n York." "I don't know you and I don't care for you," Marsh said. "I sure ain't gonna have dinner with you. Besides, the fever dream is steaming out tonight."
"I know. Know where, too."
Marsh frowned. What are you saying? You don't know niggers, I can tell. Nigger hears something, before long every nigger in the city knows it. And me, I listen good. You don't want to take this big old steamer of yours up the bayou to where you're fixing to go. You ground yourself for sure, and maybe rip out your bottom. I can save you all the trouble. See, the man you're looking for is right here, waiting for you. So when dark comes, you go tell that to your master, you hear? You tell him that Damon Julian is waiting for him at the San Luis Hotel. Mr. Julian is right eager to make his acquaintance.